Now, welcome everyone. I know that was a bit long, but I have to, you know, introduce these queens properly. Let's start with our first question in addressing to all the panelists. And I will start with inviting Ms. Lynette to answer the first question in telling us a bit about yourself and your leadership journey.
Good afternoon, everyone, sisters all, I think, on this call. Thank you very much, Sister McKinney, for that wonderful, assuring, and big up introduction, calling us all queens, which we are, really helping to make us understand that affirming each other is a very important aspect of the struggle that we are in. Secondly, to say that it is a pleasure to be participating. Let me see if I can do my video take up right. It's a pleasure to be participating in this panel discussion with Civil this afternoon. You have asked me to tell you about myself, and you can see that I'm a senior citizen. You don't want me, I can't go through the length of my 75 years of age, but what I can say is that I think that I'm a person who has had an explicit bias towards the poor. I don't see myself as a career in women's politics, but as a part of what has interested me, what my calling has been in terms of political engagement. So you have read out some of what I've done, research and action, combining those elements throughout the years and building up networks of friendship and support across the Caribbean. I think that for us as Caribbean women, a very important part of who we are our children and our grandchildren. And for me, that is very important. We have one daughter, my husband and I have been married for over 50 years, and we have three grandchildren. So that is me as it is, right? I'm a Christian. I really believe that our purpose is part of a larger charge to change reality for ourselves and for each other and the environment. I believe that we have a duty to struggle against fundamentalist understandings of spirit and to recognize that we are intended to make life good and to work for goodness in others and in ourselves. Thank you.
And same question to Honorable Valerie Woods. Tell us a bit about yourself and your leadership journey.
Sure. Well, Ms. Lynette, I certainly don't have the vast background that you have, but I thoroughly enjoyed listening to you, and I'm sure we're going to learn so much more from you. In terms of me and how I got involved in leadership, I come from a family of eight, and it's seven women and one man. So I think in a way, or, you know, from growing up, leadership came to us naturally, because at least in that little circle, there didn't seem to have barriers. We were encouraged, being so many of us, and also with such an with the age difference. I quickly learned during my time away when I left Belize, when you had mentioned Le Moyne, Makina, where I was, you know, that was my first, I would say, direct experience with the racism that exists in the US. It's a very small college in upstate New York. And it was such a teachable moment 2 years on that campus. I could not afford to come back home. So I had a half, what's called a half scholarship. It was not the full package. And therefore, I experienced it both during the time of school when the lessons were on and courses were on, as well as when there was nobody at the campus. And I think that is where I got really involved, or I guess my senses were awakened in terms of not just inequality with women, which was also prevalent there, but just the whole issue of racism and how much it had formed, that experience had formed a lot of what I ended up doing when I returned to my safe space, which was back then in that perspective, Belize. So I was drawn to always questioning, never accepting status quo just because it is. And I still struggle with that because I find that that is still present. And so when I got involved in politics, really more like most women, I find in my experience, we get involved by supporting a man or supporting a party. It took me a while before I attempted to get personally involved by contesting a convention. And my experience there, as well as my experience in the Senate, is also another reason why I think my voice became louder. And I made sure that while I won't hate the game, I certainly will learn more about the game, if you will, so that I can help others, so other young women, to appreciate even more the need why we have to support each other to come around that table. And recently with CWIL, and I see quite a few members of the CWIL Belize chapter who have signed in. You know, I'm very excited. It's a diverse group. Last count I know was over 70 plus members. And that in and of itself, I think, is testament to the whole women in leadership team that we're looking at. The fact that we recognize that one, there is an issue, and two, we have to come together to raise each other up and to make sure that those seats around the table are increased. And whatever table of leadership that may be, it doesn't have to just be politics. And so I greet you today as the recently elected Speaker of the House. I'm not the first woman Speaker of the House for Belize. Actually, I'm the fourth among the history of 12. And I was very grateful and thankful that the former Speaker of the House, who was the Laura Tucker Longsworth, she was very gracious in her time and generous. And she also had a very frank discussion about her experience as a woman Speaker of a House dominated by men. And I am forever grateful for those conversations with her, because it has certainly given me, I think, the right background to address the matter of being in the minority yet again in that field, but never losing faith that a woman, as Janice, your company slogan says, a woman can, and this woman will. So I'm looking forward to this discussion.
And the same, thank you so much. And the same question goes to our final panelist, Ms. Janice Sullivan. Tell us a bit about yourself and your leadership journey.
Oh, good afternoon, everybody. I'm delighted to see so many CWILers across the region participating in the call. So I keep it relatively brief. I'm not in the advanced years as Lynette, but I've had a very lively career, corporate career. When I think about it, 30 years in the corporate field. I've never worked in the corporate field, but I was. Valerie touched on racism. As you can tell, English accent. I'm born and raised in the UK, 70s, 80s, early, mid 60s. So very racist, multicultural UK, where society said that I was less than, but at home I was told that you had to be 10 times better and you are more than enough. So that was really had been my whole attitude throughout my whole leadership career. I'm the eldest of six, first generation immigrant. So it was kind of foisted on me to be the oldest, and you can navigate whatever needs to be done, because mom didn't always understand what was going on. She was a single parent. And as I said, we were 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 very quickly. So my career has always been the fact that I am more than enough, and you won't find anybody better than me. It's been my attitude to everything I do. And when I moved to Antigua 10 years ago I came to take on a lesser role, to be honest, just almost semi-retired, dare I say it, to semi-retire when I moved out here. But life had other plans for me. So when I was offered the role of the CEO, initially I turned it down. That's another whole discussion. I realized why I turned it down, because everything I'd see, the role models I'd seen were pale, male and stale. There was nobody like me had ever been in that role. It was always male, especially for the organization, but in other organizations, they were all male. So for me to step up, that was a little trepidation, because I'd be the first woman doing it and almost proving a point. And then at the height of my career, to step back and say, I'm not doing this anymore. I've proved it. I don't need to prove myself to anybody else. How do I now use the skill set I have, the passion I have for seeing so many talented women across the region, not harnessing their talents and what they have because of their self-beliefs, because societal norms and things like that? And how do you, my slogan is, you don't need to be empowered when you already have the power. And I truly believe that. So when we're waiting for this to happen, for something to happen to us, to give us this empowerment, you already have it. You just need to know how to unleash it. And once you do, you are all powerful. So that's my little potted narrative.
Thank you so much. It really shows how much our experiences really shape our journey, especially as leaders, female leaders. You know, racism, multiculturalism, all these different factors that shape our being as leaders. Our second question, Ms. Janice, don't run too far, is directed to you. Can you share some insights into why you chose your current career path and what motivated you in choosing this career?
My current career path as entrepreneur has not been the easiest. And I'm actually seeing where it's coming into play right now as my experience of being an entrepreneur and from the corporate world. Because of COVID, we are seeing so many women now being out of work and looking at entrepreneurship as a means to extend or carry on their career. So for me, as I said earlier, one of the things that really irritated me was seeing so many women not shining, seeing so many women not having that self-belief in themselves that they are enough and they can do, and you know, they are strong enough to do it. Like I said, they already have the power. So that led me to show that sometimes it's about showing it can be done, but also you believing you can do it. And so I want to be able to take the experiences I have and share those experiences so other women see it can be done, and that your background, because I didn't go into it much, but I came from a very humble beginnings. I said single parent, what they call project housing, council housing. So, you know, we didn't have the best clothes. We didn't always have electricity, even though we lived in the UK. I can remember those situations. I had an abusive first marriage. So my career really didn't, and I married young. So my career didn't really take off or start looking career minded till I was single, divorced with two children. And that's societal cliche. So for me, it's about bucking that, you know, society doesn't define who you are or what you're going to be. You define that for yourself. You're in control of that. So just harness it. So that's what got me into that. And I see so many women thinking that, you know, this is my lot in life. This is where it ends. And it doesn't. This is just where it's beginning. This is just where it's beginning, because the hardest bit, you know, that hardest bit is behind you. Now you know what's ahead, and it can't get any worse. That's my opinion.
That is so true. A lot of us as women, we forget that positive affirmations are so important, and the fact that, you know, you have to strive on individuality and how it's important to empower, not just wait on others to empower you, but also empower yourselves, because you have to start from somewhere, right? So I feel that what you just said really resonated with me, and I think with a lot of the queens that are here on this webinar that we need to empower ourselves first, and that's fine in our journey. And then we could accept empowerment and we can accept, you know, affirmations and so forth from others in our journey. Miss Honorable Valerie Wood, you know, you are like the awe for me right now. So I really would like to know, and I know the ladies here would really want to know, who inspired you and why? Why this person or these people inspired you?
So, funny you should ask. I was just asked that not too long ago by our local National Women's Commission. It may sound very cliche-ish, but it's okay because it's the truth and it's my truth. It's actually my mother. My mother is 83 years old, and she was in her heyday. She was a career woman. I grew up in a family where both parents had to work. She was a career woman, and she was, in those days, I believe they referred, we didn't have a city yet established as the main city, so she was the town clerk. And her skill set was really financial management, accounting. But why do I say that she inspired me? Well, she has a knack about her that I really admired as a career woman. So she, you know, obviously was a wife. She had 8 children, of which include 2 sets of twins. In those days, there's no washing machine and none of the lovely comforts that we have now. But in addition to that, she had to manage her career choice there at the then Tonga now city council. And she had to navigate a culture where, despite all those attributes that she brought, she was still considered second to the husband. There were certain societal norms. But in our house of this, you know, 7 women, 1 man, we never ever got that. It was, you can do whatever you want, you can be whatever you want. And we got that support from both of them. Now, outside of the house, that's a different matter, what you experience. But the knack that she brought as a career woman that I particularly like, and I still have to master it, I admit, is the balance she had in being the serious entrepreneur, the disciplinarian, and then just a complete jokester at the end of the day. She knew how to balance that. And I think in my limited experience thus far, particularly in this, where it first started with the Senate, where I have to admit that's where this issue of gender inequality really rang home to me more than ever. It's an important quality because it really can get overwhelming, and one must be able to have a sense of humor and be able to relax so that you pick it all back up again tomorrow, because the struggles will continue again tomorrow. And so in a nutshell, it really is my mother. She's 83 and still continues to inspire me, because she will be my harshest critic. And she will also tell me, it's okay to fail from time to time. Just make sure you get back up and learn from whatever it is that you made a mistake on. And then end it off with such humor and pranks that I, at 83, I have to be fascinated.
Thank you so much. Now we realize the importance of matriarchs in our family, right? How important it is and how inspiring they can be for our journey and our decisions in life. The next question is open to the entire panel. And question is, how important was it to have a support system, mentorship, and networking? Now, how important was networking and mentorship in your life and your journey?
I guess I could take that one. It's very important, very critical. I think we need more of it, more coaching, more mentoring to help, especially our younger girls and women as they take on leadership roles and as they assert themselves. I'm blessed because I believe I had that in terms of my home, and my network growing up, but not so much in my professional career. So I totally can appreciate, Janice, when you say, you know, once you yourself have that empowerment within you, nothing really stops you. Your voice is there. You will use it. You will be bold enough and you will speak up. But not everybody necessarily comes to that realization. And so the mentoring and the networking is important. Again, I go back to my years, the 3 years I spent in the Senate. And that time that I spent with the Parliamentarians for Global Action, that networking group, I am forever appreciative of that. It is through that network that I was able to not only listen, learn, and be even more educated about the LGBT community and the vast and deep inequalities that the community of the LGBT continue to have to experience. But it allowed me to connect directly with LGBT members, not just here in Belize, but throughout the region and elsewhere. More importantly, in listening to share their stories and to help advocate and to be an ally. So that, I don't think, quite frankly, would have been possible by me not reaching out and with that network, because it was a void, quite frankly, in my experience in Belize during the Senate. So I am a strong advocate for it. And I'm sure with what I've listened to what Janice and Lynette do in their backgrounds, they are providing similar support, much needed support.
I'll come in here. When I think about networking and mentorship, my experience falls, and I interpret my experience in the context of organization building. Organization building, in my case, where I was a member of a progressive women's organization, the Committee of Women for Progress, and of a communist organization, the Workers' Party of Jamaica. And the experience of advocacy and struggle in that context, in a national context that was enabling on the one hand, but very threatening on the other, builds skills, builds relationships, because frankly, you can't achieve much unless you have an organization. The organizational framework is what is going to nurture you, is going to help you to define your goal and to pursue that goal. And that is very important. There are persons who I know now, for example, they're all over the world, who we will talk about the experience that we got in CWP, the Committee of Women for Progress, because we had to learn to do research, we had to learn to do advocacy, we had to learn to know who we could pull in onto this maternity leave struggle and the importance of linking with women in the churches, as well as women who were not quote unquote progressive, you know. So you learn a lot of skills in terms of writing, in terms of developing strategies that are appropriate to a situation. And importantly too, you learn a lot about building and bonding as women. Because to me, in my experience, that was a very important element of coming through struggles for all these years. The fact that we knew each other, we loved each other, we used to strategize, for example, in the 1970s in Jamaica, which were really very a hot period, a very high activism, big class struggle. We learned how to look after each other's children. We learned how to say what we would do if something happened, if any of us was jailed or persecuted or whatever. And we learned how to do simple things together. For example, when the high politics of the 70s was no longer appropriate, we formed another organization called the Women's Resource and Outreach Center, which still exists today. And we learned to teach each other about how to make condensed milk in the context of the IMF, or how to do different things, how to cook simple meals. So when we talk about mentorship and networking, these are the modern concepts and they are very appropriate, but they come down to very nitty-gritty things of learning how to move from here to there around a specific objective that you want to achieve. And it's crucial. And I think that in today's Caribbean women's movement, I'm so happy that Sewell is flourishing and that we have a panel such as this pulling sisters from all these on our territories. But to me, the strengthening of our regional organization and bonding like this is a vital part of solidifying ourselves to move forward.
Mina? Yeah? So for me, how do I put this? There's different strands for me of mentoring is incredibly important, but I think from mentoring perspective, and I'm coming from a corporate perspective, it's about how ready are you to be mentored, and how invested are you in asking the right questions and strategic networking. And when I mean strategic network, I mean by knowing who the people are who will support you, because mentoring is one thing, but you want them to sponsor you, especially in the workplace. You want them to say, well, look, if a great role comes up or an opportunity comes up, like, I know this person, or I know Janice is the right person for it. I know McKinney's has demonstrated those skills. So it's not just about the mentorship. It's about being willing to ask for support you need, not just from other women, but also from men, because I'm, you know, unfortunately right now, they're in the positions of power. So you have to learn how to navigate or maneuver the way that some aspects, the way they do, or how they maneuver and why they do it that way, and how you can adapt it to you and get people and get persons to sponsor you. And don't be, mentoring is a two-way process. It's not just about you taking from that individual. It's what can you also provide to them, especially when it comes to generational. There's things I know I don't know from the younger generation now. They want from me, and I'd like to learn from them. So it's a two-way street. So networking has been very, very key. Strategic networking, especially, it's been very key. Knowing who you want to network with and why. And also what you can bring to the table in that relationship as well, because it's not just one-sided.
Wow, that was a handful of information. And I think if we could understand from this is that self-development is more of a holistic journey. You know, it's not one part, it's multiple parts in terms of being able to network and pulling from different persons, and also the importance of having a mentor and being a mentor, right, throughout your journey. The next question again is for everyone on the panel, which is, what have been your greatest professional accomplishment to date? I know it's a cliche question, but it is still a great question. Anyone could start.
I'll kick off. That was a difficult question. That was a really difficult question. First of all, I thought about being a CEO. Then I thought about going into the corporate world. I've won awards and stuff like that. But then I actually looked and go, actually, my greatest accomplishment is my whole career. Because I wasn't supposed to be who I am or what I am. So I'd like to say it's my entire, maybe cliched, but I'm proud of everything, every misstep, every failure, every time I've dusted my backside back up and got up again, because it wasn't an A to B journey. It was the whole alphabet and diversions in between. So I'm incredibly proud of where I am, and I'm incredibly proud to be able to feel confident enough and comfortable enough to share my knowledge, because too many of us have been taught that there's only room at the top for one person, for one woman. And now, you know, if you want my job, come and get it. You know, that's how I feel about it. You can, if that only helps me step up my game. So my whole career, there you go.
Ms. Woods?
Janice, I'm glad you kicked it off because I didn't like this question. I thought that it's going to be expected that I say I was elected Speaker of the House, but I don't consider it my greatest accomplishment, perhaps much to the dismay of some. I don't think I have yet to put the superlative on the accomplishment. I have enjoyed the pleasant surprises that have come along the way, because there are some, quite frankly, some instances where I thought, no, I didn't think I was going to be here. Not because I wasn't qualified, but because of my vocal positions, my statements that I make and I stand by. And so I have come to embrace that statement of own every single aspect, the good as well as the bad, all the imperfections, because in the imperfections, it's perfect. I don't think I would be where I am at and at this age had I not taken control of that process of owning the not so good as well as the good, the failures as well as the successes. And so I don't think I'm comfortable yet. I don't think my greatest accomplishment has been yet accomplished, but I am very much satisfied with what I have done so far, and breaking some ceilings in my own little way, because in some of it, I really, you know, there were so many batting against me and I broke through. So I'm happy for it. And like Janice, again, Janice, thank you, because I did not like this question. But I am so grateful that I'm not the only one that shared that view.
Well, I'm thankful for Janice and yourself, Valerie, for opening up the question in that way as well. Because when I think about it, I think that if there's anything like accomplishment from a personal individual to a private, to a public level, it has been the fact that I think that I have remained faithful to my passion of being on the side of the dispossessed, the Black people, the people who represent my mother, who was a single woman, and that explicit bias that I have towards the poor. I think that I've remained a part of a generation of women, some of whom are on this call, like Hazel Brown from Trinidad, and I see Rosina from Trinidad as well, and Alexandra is a younger woman, but a whole generation of women across the Caribbean who have just remained faithful to the calling. And although our paths don't cross as often as we usually do, we maintain a commitment. So it is that resilience, that stick-to-itiveness, that confidence that despite the setbacks, and there have been setbacks for us in our struggle, we remain faithful and hopeful and confident that Aluta continue and we shall overcome. If not in my generation, then in the generations to come. That is how I see that we have an accomplishment that says that we have tried to stand our ground, and as we have stood on the shoulders of those who have come before us, we are trying to stand a ground that others can stand on our shoulders without being self-righteous, nor, you know, just humbly doing our best.
Sister Lynette, don't go far from now, from here. Next question is directed straight to you. How can the transformational approach to leadership advance achievement of gender equality in the region?
Yes, ma'am. Well, the first thing I think that we need to do is to decide what, or to dissect what we mean by transformational leadership. It is, if we think about it in terms of the outcome, what we want to do is to advance an agenda that is fundamentally different than the one that we live in. We want to advance an agenda that brings justice and truth and righteousness and equity and equality in our societies. We want to advance an agenda that engages the multiple nature of our oppression, whether it is, we have spoken about racism, colorism, classism, issues of sexual orientation, culture, language, you know, all of these things that have been such a part of our history as a Caribbean people and Caribbean women in particular. We want to see those transformed into relationships that are respectful and that are equitable and that advance the human rights of men and women. It's a womanist agenda, and I'd say womanist rather than feminist. It's a womanist agenda that seeks to do these transformational elements in how we relate as we remain rooted in our community, because we can't advance and our community doesn't advance. So it seems to me that when we think about the multiple issues, I don't know what your issue is, and all of us must, I heard Valerie, for example, talking about the LGBTQ agenda, which is a very burning one, but it might be violence against women and girls. It clearly is political participation. It might be macroeconomic. Whatever the issue is in our Caribbean, in our territory, how are we going to seek to position ourselves and position others so that we can overturn that system in a way that builds equity and equality? So they, without apology, if we're just trying to mainstream gender and make them see gender in the context of what is happening, it's not enough. We have to transform gender relationships so that women have the confidence and the system is responsive to women's needs and rights, the whole question of human rights, understanding them, ensuring that our business deals and practices, that we are people who shine a light around the issues of corruption in our society. And therefore, there's a personal investment in transformational leadership, a personal investment rooted in who we are at our best as human beings. I don't know if it sounds too theoretical, but what I'm saying is that unless we have that approach, right, to leadership and take it wherever we are, take it to our political parties and challenge the way that things are and make proposals that can advance it, take it to our business dealings and in our entrepreneurship, take those approaches and build the alliances among women and men that will advance that agenda, then we are not doing what we need to do. But understanding where we want to go and how we want to combat all forms of discrimination and alienation is at the root of who we are, I think, as transformational leaders.
Wow. Yes, because right now transformational leadership is a really big topic, especially as it pertains to female leadership around the world. And, you know, just hearing you break it down into pieces and putting your own seasoning on it for a better interpretation of what transformational leadership and its approach to gender enhancing gender and achieving gender equality, you know, in our region is very important.
Kini, may I say one thing? I had wanted to challenge us to
go ahead
to sing, singing Sandra, Die With My Dignity. I think it would be so nice if there's a way that we could sing this at this thing or play it. But that is her transformation. She will die with her dignity. She had something that she was passionate about and that she identified as her essence, in a sense, and she has passed that on to us. So what is your passion? What is your dignity? What is my dignity that I want to die for, in a sense?
Yes, singing Sandra really, even though people consider me the younger generation, you know, growing up with a strong mother and grandmother, I would say, that they really, that was a Saturday morning, early wake up music. So you grew up hearing, singing Sandra and her music and understanding. But when you get older, you understand the importance of the words. Before it was just, you know, you're dancing, listening, you know. Now it's about, you know, understanding the meaning of the words and the woman behind the song. So, you know, it's really sad that, you know, she passed away, but at least we still have these, the music and the history behind the music to relay on in our interpretation of, you know, movement and drive as women today. And the next question is geared towards the entire panel. As a female leader, what has been the most significant barrier in your career, in your home country or internationally? Well, I know there's, as we said before, there's a lot, but, you know, what was the one that really, you know, resonates with you or, you know, really shift you into your journey or your career?
I guess I can start that one off. First, let me say, Lynette, thank you so much for that intervention on transformational leadership not only the diversity of the aspects of it that you shared, but the very relevance of the fact of why it's so needed now more than ever. I'm not so sure I can put any one barrier to it, but I guess what irks me is the fact that women, the patriarchal society and the culture that we have had to endure is where we really have been viewed and treated as less than, as not equal. And so even when you have ascended, so to speak, to the seat of a table or to the seat at a table, it is still very present. It's lip service. And the barrier of getting through to, let's face it, where a lot of decision-making is still dominated by men, because they're not, even though you're at that table, you're still not being viewed as equal among men in terms of the decision making. Now, let me not suggest that I don't subscribe, that I subscribe to the, as if there is no difference. There is differences, yes, between men and women, but when it comes to leadership and decision making ability, I happen to think that we should not be viewed so differently. And it's the constant effort, if you will, to signal out and call it out every single time when it presents itself. It could be a joke that they use. It could be a song that they play and they don't recognize what that song is saying. It can be a reference that is used ever so lightly and ever so often, but has deeper meaning that goes against the very thing that we say we're doing, which is to promote gender equality or the equality and to recognize that a woman can just as much as a man can. And it's constantly reminding, one of the thing that I had to deal with a lot was reminding myself that, no, I'm not being emotional. No, I'm not being passionate. What I am doing is calling you out because you would never do it. You would never say that or do that or act like that if in this room you were just with your buddies as men. And that's a constant, and to this day it continues, where you get the descriptions going, and it's because you're not viewed as equal. You're still viewed as less than. So I think that there are many others. Many other barriers. One, you know, you have to dress a certain way, act a certain way. Those things will take a while. But in my experience, it has been the realization that even though you have come as far as you have come, you are still, when you are around that table, it wasn't enough that you got a seat or that you took your seat. But now you have to be even more assertive around there, because you're still viewed as less than equal.
Miss Janice, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I was going to say, there was the obvious things when I first looked at this question, you know, around racism, growing up in the UK, coming to the Caribbean, being as a woman. But when I looked at it all, to be honest, I think the biggest challenge, and I'm going to use maybe a colloquialism here, is my enoughness. Is the fact that it's the fact that because I believe I am good enough and I am enough and I've got enough to give, that can sometimes be a barrier because of who does she think she is? And, you know, what makes you so confident you can bring this to the table? What makes you think that you can do this? What makes you think you can challenge a man? What makes you think you can do this as a woman? You know, so I'd say one of the biggest challenges has been my enoughness. Maybe it's my self-confidence, but it's, you know, because not everybody likes it. You know, because society says you must be a certain way. You mustn't challenge. You mustn't do this. That's not the path that was chosen for you. And as an individual, I choose to buck that trend and know what I bring. I think, yeah, I'd probably put it down to that if I had to really kind of just, that kind of sums it up a little bit. Yeah, so.
Nothing to add. Thanks, this is the patriarchy to my mind, biggest obstacle.
Okay. Now back to Madam Speaker. This question is definitely for you. What advice would you give to the next generation of female leaders, regionally and specifically in your home country?
You know, I'd say recognize what you are and make no apologies for it, who you are, and just be your authentic self. Don't try to emulate or to be what you think others want a leader to be, or a manager or a supervisor or an influencer. If you do you, you're gonna be okay. It's respect for human life, respect each other, be fair. That's all any of us can ask for. Listen, because there are perspectives out there and stories out there that you have to be able to understand in order to appreciate where the pain is coming from for some people, where the frustration is coming from. So we use it so loosely, right? Oh, leaders must listen. No, but do we understand what it takes to listen? Because you don't just listen and then not act. When you hear some of the stories, whether it be of women in abusive relationships, whether it be from the LGBT community, whether it be from a young girl or boy being bullied, it is it's a privilege, one, to be chosen, that you get to hear that story, because sometimes it comes from a very dark place and it hurts and it takes a lot out of that person. So it's a privilege that you were chosen, if you will, to take all of that in. But then what do you do with it? And I always go back to, again, my mother, who certainly had to deal with a lot of barriers in her life, said, listen, what are they going to do? Spank you because you're being you? Be you and be all of you and own it and don't ever apologize for it. As long as you're respectful and you're being fair and you're being balanced, we will disagree from time to time and you will have disagreements. But it's okay as long as it's done with respect. And so I would say that, you know, identify what you like is always a good space or place to start from, your passion, and know that it's okay sometime if you can't quite identify that yet. And just be you in the journey that you go on. Don't try to be something else, or don't try to kiss ass, if you will. It doesn't get you very far when you do that, but be you, and you're going to be thankful. But more importantly, people who are watching you, especially the younger people, you're going to be inspiring them. And that is at the essence of transformational leadership, to know that you can do it and that you're seeing others do it. Not so sure, Makina, if that addresses your question really, but...
I think it really hits a hot spot for me because as a young person, you know, it's easy to be inspired by others, right? Because sometimes you look up, you look left, there are people inspiring you, but it's so hard as a person not to, you know, how we ask as a young person, you always ask yourself, who are you? What is, how am I going to be my authentic self without mashing toes, especially when you're new to developing your career and you're trying to maneuver yourself in the world of work? So, you know, it's very difficult for you to be yourself. That's why I think a lot of young people, we just will hang our head down and just try go through the world of work until we reach the point where we can actually voice, you know? And I'm grateful to hear you say the importance of listening, and not just listening and letting it go in on dead ears, but listening and using what you listen, what you understand, what you learn, to kind of use it as a momentum towards self-development and towards creating solutions in your life. So I really appreciate that response. And, you know, in lining up this one is for Janice. You know, I bring this queen to the table. What advice do you have for current leaders, both female and male?
Valerie summed up quite a lot, what I would say about that. But just to add, is that leadership isn't about qualifications. It, you know, just because you have those letters or the piece of paper doesn't make you a leader. It's about the empathy. It's about emotional intelligence. It's about listening. It's about you intuitively connecting with the people. As well as you said, you know, you listen to understand, and how you can make a difference. And as a leader, you do not need to know everything. I see so many women pursuing qualifications as if that will tell them the magic bullet and what it's going to be. You don't need to know everything, but what you do need to know is who to ask. That's why you have a team. You know, you don't need to know everything. You just need to know who has the qualifications that can give you that information that you need. And your leadership journey can be much easier if you strategically build your network, which I talked about earlier. Be inclusive in your leadership. Because you can't be a leader of one, you know, you're leading a team. Ask for what you want. If you're not sure about something, ask. Those three little letters are so debilitating when it comes to women and their careers and leadership, you know, being afraid to ask them what the answer is going to be. And when it comes to leading your team or leading people, be clear on what you expect. Be clear on your expectations, because no one wants to think that they're going down one particular path and actually it's something else that's expected of them. So probably those are the things I'd add on to what Valerie said. Oh, and just one more thing. For women out there, there's a lot of analogies about, especially when Kamala Harris got into power, got to the VP position, that the glass ceiling is broken. It isn't. It isn't. There is just a tiny hairline crack. Still, we have to get those stilettos. Yeah, occasionally I do wear them, and actually put a great big chink in that glass, because it's nowhere near broken. We have to continue. We have to continue learning from those before us, those who are standing by the side of us, and those who are becoming, who come behind us and give that helping hand.
And that is so true. We have a question in the chat. The sister wants to know, shouldn't our experiences be used to develop others? And some become scared from experiences and hide instead of share. What do you have to say about that?
I do think that if we can share experiences, the more the better. You know, once there are more of us women, and not just in political leadership or in business leadership, but in general, old, young, you know, all from all aspects of the region. Once we have more of us doing more of this, then those moments of feeling scared start to lessen more and more, especially if we can get it from a range of women, young, old, educated in terms of formal academic qualifications with the letters behind their name, as well as those without those who are leaders and very strong one at that. I think it would help go a long way. There is truth to the saying, until you see more women in leadership, then you will be comfortable with women in leadership. You'll be comfortable speaking out. You'll be comfortable sharing stories, and you will learn. Again, I go back to what Lynette was saying earlier about transformational leadership. It is about passing it on to the next generation, to those behind us. But it is also about me learning from those who came before me, like Lynette, like the stories of Hazel Brown and so many others in this fantastic Caribbean network. I think we don't do a good job enough of it. Certainly in Belize, and I know we have some members from SeaWorld Belize, we don't get a lot of history on the role that our women played in nation building in Belize and in the Caribbean as a network of strong, courageous, bold Caribbean leaders. We don't get that. And I want to see more stories of that, but not just stories. I want to see the studies done, the gender studies, the lecture series, so that the names of women roll off ever so easily the way they do with names of men in the history of the Caribbean development. Yes, I know of Michael Manley. Yes, I know of Norman Manley, Eric Williams, and all of the other male figures, but I want to know more of our females. I want to know more of the women who may not have ascended to that of prime minister, but have made significant impact, like Lynette, who is on this panel. And we don't get to hear enough of their stories.
Yes, I am seeing a lot of questions coming in now, but I want to find line up our last question, because it's one of the most important questions. And then I will bring forward the questions that the is Women in Leadership, Achieving an Equal Future in a COVID-19 World. And this question goes to the entire panel, and it's a very important question. What do you think are some of the most worrying consequences of the COVID-19 pandemic on women in the Caribbean? And why is women leadership valuable in society building today? If you want me to repeat it, I can repeat it.
I think I've got it. Okay. I'll kick off because I'm just finished completing a survey of organizations across the region called The Future of Work for Women. And in it, the results are that organizations recognize that women were the most impacted. But when you look at how they seek to address it once the pandemic is over, it doesn't look like it's going to be addressed. And there are so many women, and the impact of women losing, especially if I speak from an Antigua perspective, we're predominantly a tourism-based country. And our tourism sector has been decimated. And the tourism sector is made up of mostly women. So that I see as having a setback on female leadership, because again, results research has shown that four times as many women than men are losing their jobs. So I see it as being a big challenge at how we address that regionally. And even if it's not in organizations, how are we equipping women to be leaders in their own organizations going forward? So I think there's a conversation not being had as yet. And I'd be interested to see what the other panelists have to say about it. But that's my early thoughts, in that there's a worrying trends. We're seeing it being recorded worldwide, globally, not so much in the region, but to be honest, based on what I'm seeing here and how a lot of our countries are organized based on tourism products and stuff like that, I think the challenge here is going to be bigger than some of the, dare say, first world countries.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Janice. I think many of our countries are tourism based, and many of those within that sector are women. And there is no denying that the impact from COVID has obliterated this, you know, decimated a lot of that. And it's going to take a steep climb and long journey to get it back. And then there's always that debate, is if you really just want to go back to how it was, because, you know, it is there, as difficult as this has been, it is also an opportunity to fix what has not been fixed for so long, for so many of our women in business, and in, not just in tourism, but every other facet. There's also the matter of domestic violence or abuse. I can't give you figures in Belize. I asked for it, actually. And I know that there was a mid-report done in July, and it is being reviewed. It's not made public yet, and they're supposed to be updating it. So I'm looking forward to see that. But anecdotally, in having the conversations with those who are doing it, they already indicated that, yes, it's a worrying trend in Belize, particularly within when we had the more restrictions and the lockdown periods. But again, internationally, globally, there are many and several pieces of articles that have been written about the very same thing, that they are seeing an increase in it as well. So it is, I share the view, Janice, that I don't like to say when this is over, because quite frankly, we don't really know. But, and I don't use the term normalcy, because I would hope that we don't go back to what was. I really hope we don't. But when we are able to better manage past a certain point after this crisis, I do think that we will be in a better position to analyze the real impacts and effects on our women, on our youths, who have had to adapt to such a change in how they learn and how they interact, which will more than likely show its effects long from now. So I share that view. It will definitely be troubling, to say the least, when we get through to the other side. and learn, realize the level of effort now that has to be put in to try and get our women back, not just productively, but to put them in a position of leadership within their sphere of work where they weren't before, but to be able to better manage another crisis. And there will be another crisis when it comes.
Adding to what both Janice and Valerie have said, I think that one of the most worrying aspects is that the decision makers don't take this into account. They are not, they don't care, or they are not aware. Well, they don't care, and they are not conscious of the fact that there's a differential impact, and they're not sufficiently conscious. They don't take it in policy in the areas that have been raised, the question of jobs and economic development, the question of that was raised, insecurity and violence. And another important fallout for me has to do, it has been implied, but the whole business of the care work, the added burden on women of care work, and the fact that this triple burden has come right on top of everything else, and we are not sufficiently addressing it, nor are we sufficiently giving support to measures to alleviate and use this as an area for creating a more important employment for women. And of course, all of this is coming on the, in a context where issues of climate change are being aggravated. All of these economic and social issues are coming in a context where the environmental issues are being aggravated. So really and truly, we need a new vision of development. And I do not sufficiently think, maybe except for Barbados, where the leader seems to have an understanding that we are in a new place. I don't see that happening sufficiently. And we in the women's movement also, I don't think we are sufficiently understanding that the circumstances require a more proactive approach on a collaborative basis. We are not sufficiently seized of the urgency of that.
Makina, I realize that you did ask that why is women's leadership, I think you asked why is women, you ended it with that part.
Why is women leadership valuable in to society building? Yes.
And yeah, I don't think I addressed that, but I don't think we should lose sight of the fact that women, I'll give you the example in Belize, and I'm sure it's the same across our Caribbean region. In Belize, women account for just about half of the population. So to not have us in leadership to help build nation society is that you are literally dismissing an entire segment of your society. So it's absolutely important. We bring the perspectives and the thoughts and the experiences of a group of citizenry that is simply being ignored when you do not include us in those decisions.
One last question on the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, we know female leaders and male leaders have different way of addressing have different ways of addressing COVID-19 pandemic. What are your thoughts on the way our female leaders within the region as compared to the male leaders in the region? What are your thoughts on the differences of how they are addressing the COVID-19 pandemic?
I'll use one word, empathy. And I think It's not just in our region. I think it has been demonstrated by other women leaders globally. Empathy. They get it. I get it. You get it. Every one of us within Sewell, we get it because we've lived it. We've experienced it, if not us, our sister, our aunt, our daughters, our mothers. And so when we talk about, when we hear words like, oh, let's think outside of the box. Yeah, we're gonna ask you, really? Give me an example. How is it going to impact me? Don't give me language that is so popular. Give me language that resonates. And you get that when you empathize, when you listen, but when you come to the table because you have lived it and you can speak to it, that it is not just monolithic. It's not just about one gender or one sector. It's all encompassing. So one word, I would say empathy.
Any of the other panelists have anything to add to that? Or?
McKinney, you're muted.
I think that the perspective that is coming from Prime Minister Mia Mottley, that we need to seek reform of the socioeconomics, the economic frameworks that prevail. For example, she's talking about revision in terms of the terms of loans. She's talking about partnerships within the third world, within the developing countries, with Africa, that like-minded countries that are looking for new ways to address the economic fallout. I think that she has a kind of a perspective that is talking about us in the Caribbean and linking with our brothers and sisters in other regions to seek new ways of looking at our development and pursuing our development. That I don't hear that sufficiently from the male leaders of the Caribbean.
Thank you so much. I think that we touched every point and every area as it pertains to COVID-19 and addressing, our leaders in addressing this new pandemic and, the role women play in addressing and dealing with the pandemic.